Good afternoon, and welcome to the House Ag Policy Committee. The clerk will note who's present, and we will wait to approve minutes until we have a quorum. We're just shy of a quorum right now, but we will begin. We do have a bill that's going to come before us, and we're going to, along with that, have the presentation from ALC. So I think if that's how you'd like to, so that they can do the presentation about what exactly they do, and then we can hear the bill. Does that sound okay? Representative Erickson?
I'll stay here then, and then they'll take care of it.
Actually, why don't you join us here, and we'll move the bill, and then we'll have them present. So, Representative Erickson, you can actually move the bill. We just can't vote on it yet.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 322 is as introduced, which would extend the sunset date of the Minnesota Agricultural Educational Leadership Council by 5 years. Otherwise, it will expire on June 30th of this year. It was first approved in 97. Then it was extended for 3 years, and then extended for 5 years, and extended for 5 years, and we are at that point of wanting to extend it another 5 years. So I so move this House File 322.
Thank you. And you are going to move the bill and so it can be referred to government operations.
That would be correct.
All right. Very good. And we do now have a quorum, so good. We're in good shape. And you have some testifiers who would like to present on behalf of MALC. So if they would come down and they can introduce themselves and be able to speak to the bill as well as just the council. So if you'd introduce yourself for the record, please.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Kesha Henry, and I serve as the Executive Director for the Minnesota Agricultural Education Leadership Council. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to present in front of you today.
Madam Chair, my name is Jerry Schoenfeld. I work with the Minnesota Association of Agricultural Educators, and I'm kind of here just as a reference point for the most part. I worked with the creation of this council in 1997, and kind of here to help answer questions.
Very good. And I believe you have a presentation to give. So, Dr. Henry, you can go ahead and get started.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Today, I'm going to share with you a brief overview of the history of MALC. I'm also going to talk a little bit about some of the work that we have done, some of our accomplishments, and some of our goals for the future. Additionally, we also have an ag teacher, the executive director for the Academy for Sciences and Agriculture, and we also have a student at the University of Minnesota who's pursuing agricultural education. The Minnesota Agricultural Education Leadership Council, which is abbreviated as MALC, is comprised of a 17-member legislative council that was developed in 1997. Our members come from a wide background of individuals, which includes legislators, the Minnesota FFA, the Minnesota Association of Ag Educators, representative from MINSCU, representative from the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. We also have representative from the Minnesota Department of Education, as well as representative from the University of Minnesota. Now, in 1997, when the Minnesota Agricultural Education Leadership Council was formed, what was the need then why we came up with the idea for the development of this great organization? Well, back then, there was a shortage of agricultural teachers and well-trained students take on opportunities and careers in agriculture. Through that discussion, the Minnesota Agricultural Education Leadership Council was developed in an effort to provide leadership to expand and grow agriculture education across the state at all levels, from primary right through higher education. MALC, we have some key objectives that we focus on. The first of which is to increase student enrollment in agricultural education program in Minnesota at all levels. So as I mentioned earlier, from primary school, ag education, right through higher education, secondary, at the baccalaureate level and above, from business management. We also want to expand the scope of agricultural education both geographically and programmatically. Therefore, for our secondary ag education programs, we want to expand those programs within schools that are existing. There are existing agricultural education programs, as well as expand those programs within school districts that there are none. We also want to coordinate activities and provide leadership to improve ag education programming and increase our partnership with various organizations across the state. We also aim to strengthen and enhance the development of high school agricultural education programs and their FFA chapters. Essentially then, with the list of objectives that we seek to carry out each day, we want to serve as a premier leadership organization for ag education across the state. Just to go over briefly a little bit about how we have been funded in the past and our budget. In 1997, the Minnesota legislature provided a biannual special appropriation to the University of Minnesota base level funding for enhancement of agricultural education programming. At that time, our original allocation was $300,000. To date, our operating budget is $238,131. We also have an additional $235,000 that comes through the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. So our total budget today is $473,131. Our office, MILSI's office, is located at the University of Minnesota in the Agricultural Education Department in Rutech Hall. Just to go over a little bit of statistics on the Minnesota Education Program at the university. Currently, we have 93 undergraduate students enrolled at the University of Minnesota, at the Twin City, Crookston, and the 2+2 partnership institutions. So for the two-year colleges, along with the University of Minnesota Twin City campus and Crookston, we have 93 students, undergraduate students. We have 30 graduate students, 18 student teachers, we have a new recruiter, and we have 2 new faculty. Just to give you a brief overview of our statistics of our secondary enrollment of agricultural education students across the state. We have over 21,000 students enrolled in secondary agricultural food and natural resource education programs. We have over 9,500 Minnesota FFA members. We have 183 agricultural food and natural resource programs. We have 215 teachers. We also have 55 farm business management instructors across the state. We have 60 sites and 8 college campuses. And for that, we also have 4 regional deans. For our secondary programs, based on the numbers here, you can see we have some programs that there are 2 or more ag teachers. Some of our accomplishments to date that we have been very proud of at MILC. We are proud to say that we have helped to revitalize the University of Minnesota Agricultural Education programs through various initiatives such as enhanced scholarship programs, enhanced agricultural education staff. We've also initiated the 2+2 network for 2-year college students to transfer into the University of Minnesota. To date, we have awarded over $2.7 million in competitive grants. We have also provided funding for revitalization of multiple ag ed programs and development of new projects. Madam Chair, if I may call in Mr. Jeff Eppen, who's an ag teacher at the Sibley East High School, who has been a recipient of our grants program, to talk a little bit about some of the impact of our grants on his school.
Certainly. And as you come to the table, if you'll just introduce yourself into the microphone so that we can have that recorded and then go on with the presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jeff Eppen, agriculture education teacher, instructor, FFA advisor, at Sibley East High School, located in Arlington, Gaylord, and Green Isle, Minnesota. I just want to share with you a little bit today about some of the successes that we've had at our school through the grant money and availability and help of MEALC and how they've affected our program. I started teaching there about 11 and a half years ago, I guess, as we're a little past mid-quarter today. And I came to a school that was offering a half-time position in agriculture. I was hired, and they allowed me and came up with some courses to allow me to become full-time. And to be honest with you, I was the fourth ag teacher for those seniors that year in 4 years. They had gone through a different one. And when I say ag teacher, I don't mean what some of you maybe have experience with in agriculture. I'm talking about people they just found to fill in. One was a social studies teacher who they just let teach ag for half a year. So it was kind of in shambles. The community there, I'll tell you, is very agricultural, obviously like many rural schools and communities in Minnesota. So our major employers in our district are agricultural companies, whether that's cooperatives or egg producers or crops, livestock producers, and then some processing plants and agribusiness to go along with those. So we have a large support group, but the ag education system there was failing. And I tell you that history because I want to let you know that last year, my partner and I, we've actually added on a second ag teacher as I've gone through this process. We were awarded the 2012 Ag Program of the Year for the state of Minnesota. And so we've gone from basically shambles to a chapter and program that does a lot of good things for students. And a lot of that is due to some of the initiatives of MEALC. So I want to let you know that that's a thank you for that. And I want to explain to you today a little bit about how we came to that point and how we got from where we started. So we received our first grant from MEALC back in 2003. And we've been awarded 7 grants throughout our history here the last 10 years in 3 different categories that MEALC has. They actually have 4 categories. The one category we haven't received a grant through is for some major projects in the state. It's not really awarded on an individual level. So we've received grants in all different areas that MEALC has set as priorities and how we're going to help out ag education across Minnesota. And you can see those 3 are listed there in innovation, priority issues, and quality programs. And cumulatively, we've received out of the, I think Dr. Henry mentioned, $2.7 million, we've received directly at our school over $21,500 during those 3 different grants. And listed there on the screen are the different grants that we've awarded. And I'm going to talk briefly about each one of those and a little bit and how they have impacted our program at Sibley East. One of the first ones we received was a horticulture business implementation. What we needed to do to improve the education there was to get industry appropriate equipment, tools, and software in students' hands. So in our landscaping class, we added some landscape software. That's what real landscapers really use out in industry. We purchased some tools and equipment, and because of that, we were able to sort of build a small landscaping business, which our students actually then go out and do. It's not just learning about the landscaping in the classroom, it's also taking those skills and applying them outside. And they'll do a complete landscape every year using that because of the ability. Now, if MEALC wouldn't have been able to fund that grant, we may have, as a school district, not have been able to afford to purchase a software that was fairly expensive and a bunch of equipment and tools and those kinds of things. So it provided us, again, with a way to purchase equipment and things that we couldn't get in other areas. We also purchased we received a natural resources grant that we were able to update some curriculum with, and we updated with some Minnesota-specific curriculum. The Minnesota Deer Hunters Association puts together a curriculum that we purchased, as well as purchasing some taxidermy equipment. We have a lot of students in school who are interested in natural resources and wildlife, and by actually putting those real live things into their hands, real equipment, real tools, giving them real world experiences, we are able to attract more students to our program. I'll tell you, in the beginning, when we started, we didn't have a lot of students involved in our classes. You know, class levels might have been, I had one class my first year with 3 students in it, my 9th grade agriculture class. And now we have overflows. In fact, I'm on an overload right now, and I have, out of the 9th graders, we have about 85 9th graders, I've got 72 of them in agriculture. Okay. So most students are seeing the value, they're seeing the experiences they can gain, and they're seeing the hands-on and equipment as part of that. And MEALC has been very supportive of being able to allow us to apply for grants to build these types of curriculums. Another one that kind of goes along with that is agri-science. You know, there's been legislation that's gone through to allow ag teachers to teach some science credits, and that's been some discussion you've been having. And this was one way that we're able to teach science at our school and to allow our agriculture students to receive science credit towards graduation is to by adding some science curriculum. And we were able to do that with a grant from MEALC. And we purchased a curriculum that fits well with the Minnesota standards in science education, and it allows our students to receive science credit. So, again, we were able to take some students that maybe were non-traditional ag students and entice them to take agriculture classes and now have found a place. And it's one of my most enjoyable classes. We cover things like genetics and biofuels and those kinds of things that are critical to Minnesota agriculture as well. So. We also upgraded and brought back an agricultural mechanics curriculum that we were losing. We have a lot of students who have an interest in the mechanical background, obviously. And we were able, through a grant from MEALC, to bring back and implement some engine training and those kinds of things. You know, that's expensive to dive into a mechanic shop and outfit a school with tools and equipment. And again, because of MEALC being able to get a fairly large chunk of money at one time rather than small little bits every year, we were able to go ahead and reestablish that. Last year I had 20 students in my agriculture mechanics class, and five of those are continuing on in college in agriculture mechanics, mostly at South Central College in Mankato, in that farm mechanics and diesel mechanics programs. So we're seeing a lot of students take advantage of that. Technology, of course, in agriculture, it's important. Again, so we've upgraded, I'm talking about GPS, those kinds of things, real-world applicable things they can get an example with in the classroom and take that knowledge into further education and then out into the work field and, you know, feel comfortable because they've had, you know, access and they've had experiences with those types of real-world technology. So we've added some technology also because of MEALC. And our last two things there, and probably some of the things that we've been receiving some of the best accolades on, and some of you have maybe heard about a little bit of this, is we've been able to establish a community-supported agriculture business at our school, and through that we established a garden project, which to tell you a little bit about that, we were sitting around the administrator's office a couple years ago and we were brainstorming about how can we get more students actively involved within our community and how can we get outside of the school walls, you know, even further than we already are. And we talked about ways to do that, and this was what came out of it. We established a 2-acre school garden where half of the vegetables, and so 1 acre, goes to the school food service program. Another half of it is put into a CSA, so we have 30 community shareholders who all invest into our school district, and they receive vegetables each week. That investment to us, they're bringing back about $6,000, and we're using that to help pay students in the summer to go out and work, have supervised agricultural experience programs, and that's kind of how we established that. And by using the MEALC money, we've been able to make it a sustainable project. The initial investment was there because of MEALC, because of the grant we were able to get, and now we've been able to take that money, and instead of having just used up in a grant, we're able to keep getting more and more income coming in. So it's been a sustainable project, but wouldn't have been possible without an initial seed money, or for lack of a better term. So that's been really great. We've received tons of national recognition on that because of the fact of healthy living, healthy lifestyles, healthy food in the cafeterias. And it really started because we wanted to get students an experience with agriculture. And really, we've received tons of press and publicity because of that. So it's been an interesting thing, and it's been really good for our students and our school, and especially for our agriculture program. Another thing that we used some MEALC funding for was in crop production. And we're not just farmers. We've established a 5 to 20 acre test plot, depending on the year. And so far we've done corn and are planning to do soybeans in the future. Where we rent the land from a local farmer. The co-ops donate all the inputs that go into that crop, and we get seed donated from our Sibley County corn and soybean growers, as well as local co-ops who would like us to try. Last year we had 44 different corn varieties in our plot. We had 17 acres, and by the time we get done paying our bills, our program took in slightly over $20,000 in profit. which we're able to reinvest that into our garden program, as well as we're establishing scholarship funds for students who are pursuing agricultural careers at our school. And again, that was started because of a grant from MEALC that gave us a couple thousand dollars to start off with, to partner up with some local farmers and rent some land so that the farmer wasn't losing his rent on that. But we were able to do that, and it's turned into a very profitable endeavor for us and allowed us to do a lot of good things with it. So again, taking those MEALC dollars and taking the chunk that we got and expanding it even more in another sustainable type project. So we've had some major impacts there. We have, because of MEALC and because of what we've done there in support of the legislature, we've been able to develop a two-person program. We have about 110 FFA members now, compared to about 14 when I started there 11 years ago. We have about 350 agriculture students that come through our doors, and those are unduplicated students, so 350 different students out of our total school population of 1,200, and that includes elementary. So we're seeing about 70% of our junior high and above students that come to our agricultural program because of the things that we offer. Students are aware of many more opportunities. We're seeing a lot more students going into agricultural career fields because of that. We're seeing non-traditional students. Right now I have a student who's a freshman at the University of Minnesota majoring in ag education. He spent his first 12 years of life growing up in Richfield at the Mall of America. He thought milk came from a grocery store. Okay, so now he's pursuing ag education, wants to be an ag teacher and an FFA advisor. It's a great story. We've been able to be financially sustainable. The projects we've developed, we've tried to use the money as well as we possibly can, and especially the last couple projects are good examples of how we've taken that money and been good stewards of that, and we've developed sustainable projects. And in fact, we have not applied for a MEALC grant the last several years because we've been able to have those projects in place already. The updated technology and curriculum has been critical for getting the number of students into our program that we currently have, and because of the MEALC funding. So as we look forward to MEALC being reallocated and refunded, we hope it continues. There are things on the horizon in agriculture education that are going to be critical for us to continue the successes that we have. There are many other programs that are very similar to what I just told you about in my school, but yet there are still some where I was 10 years ago that still need the help and need the funding and need some assistance to get the programs back to where they need to be. So I'm sharing you one success story here at our school, but there are many more similar to ours, but yet there are also more that still need this assistance and help of this very critical project that you have here.
So. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You have told a wonderful story. Appreciate that. Can you just spell your last name?
Yes.
Please, for the record.
E-P-P-E-N.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions? Yes, Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair, and congratulations on your program. Just checking or wondering, the classes you offer, are they all electives or are any of them mandatory classes for your kids?
Mr. Appen.
They are all electives for students with the exception of the eighth grade class. Eighth graders are required to be with me throughout the year as on trimester rotation, so for about 13 weeks, 12 weeks, they're required to be with me. And that's a big reason why my ninth grade numbers are so high. I'm able in those few weeks to present some things that they find exciting and interesting. I tell them about the world of agriculture. I spend a lot of time focusing on consumer things. We teach them about where their food comes from. And I teach them about opportunities and let them know about opportunities that exist in the ag industry and how broad and diverse that is here in Minnesota, and how many jobs really are tied to agriculture. And we're seeing very good numbers now that are choosing to take agriculture in ninth grade as an elective because of them having to be there in eighth grade. So the percentage keeps going up every year, and I don't know what's going to happen when I get to 100. So.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Madam Chair. I hear from some that with all of our preponderance of mandated classes, it's hard for kids to find enough time in the day to take elective courses. How did you work around that? And did getting some of the grad credits in your science help you with that problem?
Mr. Appen.
Yeah, it is difficult for some schools, especially as budget cuts come through to education. They look to eliminate elective courses. And MEALC has done some help with that over the 12 or 13 years that that's been in existence. And it was an issue in our school as well. We were lucky enough to be on an eight-period day.
for a while, and now most recently we've gone to sort of a unique schedule. We've gone to a four-period day, but every other day is different. So today my four classes met, and they won't meet again until on Monday. Actually, we don't have school Monday, so they'll meet again on Tuesday. Tomorrow I will have my junior high classes meet. And so they're on a different day. We've extended the periods, which has allowed us to get out in the community and do some of these activities, do some of these out-of-the-school projects, because our hours are now 83 minutes in length. When it was first presented to have a schedule change, our administration actually recommended going to a seven-period day, which would have lessened all of our students' ability to be in one elective class. We worked with them diligently, especially those of us in career and technical education, to talk with them and come up with a solution that would still allow students to be able to experience those career and tech ed courses, especially agriculture and facts and business, as we have all of those. And we were able to come to a solution. I'm lucky in my district. We have very good administration who really sees the need to have a well-rounded students in our school. And they really do appreciate the career and tech ed classes that we offer. The science credit, like you mentioned, was critical. Agriculture education teachers are also have the option right now of teaching some social studies or economics credit as well. Some are doing some art credits through floral design and landscape design and using some of those specific artistic skills. At our school, we've chosen to stick the science route for now. But as we move forward, economics is the next one that we're looking at as offering economics credit through an ag marketing and ag economics course. So, thank you.
Representative Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is really exciting to see. When I was on the school board, we tried to get FFA started up in my home district. But what I wanted to ask you was, first of all, you said you've gone to an 83, is that a block type of scheduling?
Mr. Eppen.
Yeah, we have gone to an 83-minute block schedule. So the students still have 8 hours on their schedule, but they come to the first four one day and go to the next four the following day and repeat that every other day rotation throughout.
Okay. So
they're still able to get 16 different semester classes in throughout the year. Of course, some of those are year-long classes, especially in the core areas, but it offers some flexibility in terms of elective.
Representative Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What I would like to know is, does the eighth grade do the block scheduling also? Is that in the same school building? And when you do the eighth grade, how many schools do an eighth grade access to an agriculture class?
Mr. Eppen.
Yes, Representative Keel. They have a lot of schools are starting to offer eighth grade. I shouldn't say a lot. A lot more are now than in the past. Still a smaller number. I would estimate 10 to 15% are probably branching into the junior high. Minnesota FFA did pass a change to their constitution a few years ago to allow 7th and 8th graders to participate in FFA. And in fact, just recently at our state ag teacher conference a year ago or so, we allowed 8th graders to participate in the state FFA conference at the advisor's discretion based on maturity and those kind of things. So we are, well, it is expanding. Our 8th grade, our school is set up a little bit differently. We are at two different towns. We have Arlington and Gaylord. At the Arlington campus, we have our high school, which consists of grades 10 through 12, and there's also elementary there. And in Gaylord, at the junior high, we have our grades 7, 8, and 9 there, as well as another section of elementary students. So, yes, they are on the same schedule as our high school students, and that which allows me to go back and forth between the junior high and high school. So my schedule, it allows me to be in Gaylord at the junior high one day with the 8th graders and 9th graders, and then the next day I'm in the high school in Arlington teaching my high school courses. In addition to that, we do have an additional high school agriculture teacher who was hired about 9 years ago when we had a technical education tech ed teacher retire. We opened it up to both agriculture and tech ed, and he was chosen. And so now we have two ag teachers and still have an industrial tech teacher there as well.
Well, I thank you.
Representative Keel.
I thank you very much, and I'm glad you're cultivating a few more agricultural teachers. I come from a very agricultural-based area, and we have very few FFA programs and ag classes, and I think it's just a really important thing in Minnesota. Thank you.
All right. Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I also want to thank you for coming today and sharing your history and your story with us. This is exciting and hopeful. I, too, live in an area down in Rice County that has some of the towns do have an active FFA program. my city of Faribault, my high school does not. And so that's been an issue for me since I've come here. And I just wanted to ask you, what comes first, the chicken or the egg? I'm pursuing an FFA chapter in Faribault to get one started and as a catalyst for students to get them involved. And I'm glad to, I mean, the seventh and eighth graders, I think that's a good place to start. What would be your ideas for me on that? And do you think that it's a catalyst, the FFA, or is there something better?
Mr. Eppen.
Well, you bring up a lot of good points there, and the question is oftentimes chicken or the egg, which does come first. And in reality, in order to have FFA at a high school, you would need to have an agriculture education instructor there. But what you're talking about isn't uncommon, and we've seen it sprout up actually twice in the last year. We've seen a new program at St. Peter. You're probably familiar with that, not too far from there. They established an academy there where they brought in an ag teacher for the first time in, I think, 30-some years. And they're off and running and have students also coming from Le Sueur Henderson there as well, neighbors of ours. Another example is down in Fairmont. They recently restarted a program with some funding. It was funding for meal seed for that? Okay. Part of the funding they established there to get an ag teacher back in Fairmont also came through this council. And they've committed to 3 years of having an ag teacher there, and they've raised money to have them through the community, and now she will be there. So your first bet is probably to get the school board on board and also to get some community members together and get some area agribusinesses, a rich area of agriculture there. I grew up in Goodhue County, and now live in Scott and Sibley County, so I'm very familiar with where you're at, and there's a lot of opportunity there. And I agree with you that there needs to be an agriculture program back in the Faribault area.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the testimony. And Representative Fritz, building off of your question and comments, working with Mr. Schoenfeld and Ms. Henry, and I think in consultation with Professor Brian Boer, and others, we're talking about the return on investment through MLC. And this is one of the reasons why I introduced House File 407. And it doesn't matter who introduces it or anything like that. The point we're trying to make is there's an opportunity here with the AGRA funds, at least a portion of those, to reinvest into things like this. And you see what the return is as well. And one of the things that we were hoping to be able to promote here is channel additional dollars into MLC to where there could be like a competitive grant process or whatever, to where these high schools that want to reinstate their program, where there'd be some seed money in order to do that. And again, there's many people that were in part of these discussions in order to bring forth, you know, legislation that would do that. And do you know, question to the testifier, do you know, as far as the FFA students, what is the graduation rate across the state? Do you know that? And compared to, you know, the state graduation rates?
Either Mr. Eppen or Dr. Henry.
I don't have the exact number, but what I do know that students who are engaged in career and technical education, they have higher graduation rate than the regular students, over 90-something percent. And I can get that figure later and get you know what. Very high, over 90%.
Mr. Schoenfeld.
Madam Chair, Representative Hamilton, again, last year Representative Keel had worked with us on some graduation. And so we testified ahead of the Education Committee, and we brought in someone from the National Career and Technical Group out of Tennessee, and I can go back and try and review that for you, but as Dr. Henry had indicated, those that were involved in these kind of programs were above 90%, and that compares to some schools in Minnesota that are in the 40s. In addition to that, now there's other factors that are involved in that as well, but what we found in terms of their statistical analysis of students that were involved in these kinds of programs was their graduation rates were much higher and their abilities in math and science were much higher than the ordinary student group. And I don't have that information right off the top of my head right now, but we did have it last year for the Education Committee, and it was done on, you know, so we can find that information out. I would also like to just briefly mention to Representative Fritz that I grew up in Waseca, and so I was the chapter president for the Waseca FFA and a district FFA officer. And my district FFA advisor at that time was Paul Day, who had come from Faribault. And Faribault at that time had the premier, one of the premier FFA programs in the state. So it is sad that they lost it over time. They were one of the top. Faribault was one of the top in the state at that time. So I'd be glad if you were able to renew it in that area.
Representative Fritz.
And Madam Chair, and to the testifier, because the students are there. They're just there for this. So I think we just need to find a way to attract them and get them started. So I'll be talking with you.
All right.
Madam Chair, if
yes,
I could,
Mr. Schoenfeld.
Before we're done here, if there's is just a couple of minutes time later for me to speak to that, one of the problems is finding instructors, too, and I've got a little bit of discussion about that that I'd like to carry.
All right. Any other questions for Mr. Eppen? Thank you very, very much for your testimony. It was
thank you,
inspiring.
Madam Chair.
Inspiring.
Thank you.
Informational. Thank you. And Dr. Henry, do you have somebody else that you wanted to speak?
Yes, Madam Chair. Another program that we are very, very proud of is our scholarship program. Today, we have provided over $346,000 in scholarships for students who are interested in studying agricultural education and ultimately go on to pursue education careers teaching in these secondary programs. So we have provided support and resources for students to recruit and also retain our new teachers. Today we have Tyler Warren, who is currently a junior at the University of Minnesota, and who's interested in becoming an ag teacher. But I'm sure if I may call on him to
yes.
speak.
Welcome to the committee. If you would please state your name, and if you could spell your last name, please.
My name is Tyler Warren, and my last name is spelled W-A-R-R-E-N.
Thank you. Go ahead with your testimony.
Good afternoon. Like I said, my name is Tyler Warren. I'm currently a junior pursuing a degree in agricultural education at the University of Minnesota. I come from a dairy farm by Litchfield, Minnesota, and I was very involved both on my farm and in organizations such as the FFA, 4-H, and other community organizations. The growth in knowledge I experienced both on my farm and through taking agricultural education classes and doing work with the FFA has really grown my appreciation for agriculture and service. I've since given back by working on my family's farm and serving as a state FFA officer last year, which was a very rewarding and encouraging experience for me to go through. These opportunities and experiences have fostered my passion to pursue my career of becoming an agricultural teacher. MELC has benefited me also. I've received scholarships from them for 3 years now, and they've been great to have at the University of Minnesota. When I told my parents I wanted to go to the U of M, they were a little bit hesitant. I was a very shy, reserved young gentleman growing up, and they were kind of hesitant of me going down to the big city, but I knew I'd have the support there from the Agricultural Education Department and the MELC that was housed there, and they have helped me tremendously. And I know that MELC will be there in the future for me to provide a lending hand, whether it be advice, resources, or grants when I become a teacher. My interest in becoming an ag teacher stems from my passion of both agricultural and education. I knew I wanted to become a teacher, and becoming an agricultural teacher just made sense for me. I see the opportunity that it has to provide. The opportunities and knowledge I can provide with students is endless, along with the community. I can't think of a more rewarding job than to teach, engage, mentor, and inspire students to do the same onto others. As an agricultural teacher, I hope that I can inspire my students to become better people so that my students can make an impact on their school and in their community and in their future, because I can't do that for them, if that makes sense. Agricultural education and agricultural teachers are vital in the state of Minnesota. One in four jobs in Minnesota is directly related to agriculture, and only with agricultural education can the state of Minnesota continue to grow and prosper. Agricultural education focuses on all aspects of agriculture. Food science, agricultural mechanics, animal science, agricultural economics, everything under the sun. An agricultural classroom has so much to offer. I came from a program that wasn't necessarily very active, and so that kind of sparked my interest in becoming an ag teacher. I graduated with 11 other students who were fairly involved in the FFA and the agricultural education program in Litchfield. And the skills they gained and said at our chapter banquet our senior year was really rewarding. I had classmates attend various universities for various degrees. One student is now at Purdue pursuing an engineering degree. There is a young female who received a full ride to the U of M for the nursing program. And I went to the U of M. There were several students who went to Ridgewater to pursue two-year technical degrees. And for the students that weren't necessarily pursuing an agricultural degree, they said, you know, the knowledge and the leadership gained from taking classes and being part of the FFA will help them no matter what career they pursue. They'll be able to be better consumers and to share that knowledge with others in their field. So with that, I'm really excited to be at the U of M, to have these experiences, to work with FFA, to work with MELSI, bettering myself and becoming the best agricultural teacher that I can, because it's something I'm very passionate about. Every time I go home, I find myself talking to my parents about it, my grandparents about it. I keep a journal or a notebook of all the classes I want to teach, of some of the ideas I want to place in my community, of wherever I end up. It's going to be a very rewarding career for me, and it's like we've addressed earlier, there's towns around Minnesota that need agricultural education programs and that want them. So I want to be that effective, inspiring agricultural teacher who puts their students and their communities before them to make sure they have the opportunities that agricultural education can have.
Thank you, Mr. Warren. You're a wonderful advocate. Excellent job. Representative Hamilton has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, and I'd echo that, too. It was very well done. My question is, how many ag teacher positions are open currently across the state? If you know that, Mr. Warren. And then also, are there enough for the University of Minnesota? Is there anything that we can do, to encourage the University of Minnesota to attract those students, to direct them into ag education? Is there an adequate number in the pipeline, I guess is my question. And if not, is there anything that we can do to encourage the University of Minnesota to attract more students into that program?
Mr. Warren, do you have an answer?
I think I do. The last time I was on the Ag Ed website through the U of M, I believe there was 4 or 5 openings. I know last year there was around 25 openings in the state of Minnesota. Whether it be due to retirement or kind of transition of ag teachers around different communities. There are a plethora of openings every year. And, you know, to get students to come to the U of M, like I said, with my parents, they were a little bit hesitant. It's that big school in the big city. But there's resources like the FFA. We do a Change Lives workshop at the Minnesota State FFA Convention each year where about 50 to 60 students come who are interested in pursuing a degree in agricultural education. So there's those avenues to kind of get students excited about maybe pursuing a degree in agricultural education. But I think it's working with different organizations like MELSI and the Agricultural Education Department at the U of M to know that students will have a rewarding career and to provide scholarships and maybe advice for students interested in the career.
And Dr. Henry or Mr. Schoenfeld, do you have...
Madam Chair, Representative Hamilton, maybe I could add a little bit to that. You can't hold me exactly to these numbers. I'm going to go off one or two. But when MELSI was first created in 1997, the reason for its creation was exactly the question that you just raised. In 1997, the University of Minnesota had kind of let agricultural education, for a large part, go by the wayside. And we had gone from a department of an ag ed that at one time probably had about 7 instructors down to a half-time professor in 1997. Today, as of yesterday, when we testified ahead of the Senate, Dr. Levine was there from the College of Agriculture, and he indicated that we have 3 full-time professors now that are dealing with it. What does that mean in terms of students? In 1997, we were down to 6 graduates in ag education in the state of Minnesota. And the University of Minnesota is the only place in the state that you can get a degree in ag education. You cannot get it in any of the state university systems. Today, we have 93 undergraduates, 30 graduate students, and so the amount of student increases has been significant over that time. Now, a couple of years ago, we were up to 120 undergraduate students. But part of the reason for that was because we had had a program, and it was through MEALC. This is all relates to MEALC. How did we go from 6 up to the higher numbers? MEALC instituted a number of programs back at that time. One was helped with the University of Minnesota to implement the 2+2 college system so that you could, for instance, start at Ridgewater for the first 2 years and then take your last 2 years at the University of Minnesota. So it brought in students that way. Secondly, the scholarships, for instance, as attested to here, there were scholarships provided through MEALC to try and attract students. They also put in a recruiter program where MEALC paid for the recruiter to go and work with young people out in rural Minnesota. One of the problems you have in rural Minnesota is the fact that most counselors at high schools tend to think of agriculture as cows and sows. You know, it's the farm kind of thing. Agricultural education does work with production agriculture, but it goes far beyond that. And I think that, for instance, the initiation of the Van Nuys Heights Urban Ag School, Charter School, I think that's going to be talked about further here, is one of the initiatives that MEALC made to bring to go beyond the rural into an urban area in these areas as well. We do have a problem with the university in the fact, and the reason that our numbers dropped from 120 down to, at the present time, 93, in part, it's my belief at least, is that the University of Minnesota a few years ago instituted caps on the number of students that they would allow to come in as freshmen into individual programs. And this was an attempt to control the number of students in the entire university. And the cap, I believe, in agricultural education, I might be off by 1 or 2, but I believe it is now capped at 10 or 12 per year is all that is allowed to come into the program. And so that cap, it does stand as an impediment to the expansion of programs. When it was mentioned that there were 4 openings, that's not the total number of teachers that were open during the year. That's the number of unfulfilled teachers at the present time. Mm-hmm. And so we tend to lose we tend to lose 3 or 4 programs a year because they can't find a teacher. Most of the teachers that come in Minnesota, unfortunately, or a large portion of them, come from River Falls, Wisconsin. They come from South Dakota State or University of North Dakota. We need to have those to fulfill it because we're not producing enough instructors in Minnesota. In addition to that, we did have a program at Crookston until 2 years ago that had about a dozen a year ag ed that would come through there. Unfortunately, Crookston, their chancellor decided to end the program. And so because of that, we do have a shortage of instructors. The other thing I would tell you is, as you probably know, working in the agricultural business area, ag education is the kind of thing that all kinds of other people want to hire people from. So it's hard to maintain teachers. And because of that, MEALC has also put in TIP program, PEP program. These are programs that are mentoring programs to try and maintain teachers once they're into the field, tries to keep them in the field, and it provides mentoring programs to help do that.
Right. Okay. Representative Dill, did you have a question?
No, Madam Chair. I think we should consider a resolution by this committee to have Webster redefine shy young gentlemen. I mean, I was reading this book, the Soybean Growers Association. There's 3 more bushel of the acre after he got done testifying. That's pretty impressive, and I enjoyed it, and I think it's pretty compelling.
Thank you. Definitely. Mr. Warren, you've done an outstanding job. Representative Wagenius.
Yes. Thank you. I don't know who might be able to answer this, but have any of your graduates chosen to go into the Peace Corps before they come back here to teach?
Dr. Henry, or?
Not that I'm aware of. I can look up that information and submit it later. I know we have a new scholarship program, the MED Initial Licensure Program, that students who have done their degrees in agriculture and maybe are out there working in ag industry, and they decide, you know, they want to come back and teach. Or new scholarship program provides opportunities for them to come back and pursue their licensure and go into the field and teach. So we have students who have been to other areas who will come back, do their licensure, and go out and teach.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I think my question is really a different one, because, I mean, not only is there a service to another country, but if agriculture is international, it's not, it is international. And generally speaking, when you talk to returned Peace Corps volunteers, they will say that they certainly learned more than they gave. And I just, it's the learning more part that I was interested in.
Mr. Schoenfeld.
Madam Chair, Representative Gaines, I can only offer anecdotally, I am aware of a couple of ag instructors that were in the Peace Corps. It's not, I wouldn't say it's probably a common thing, but I know that there have been people who have done that. And also at the University of Minnesota in that area, there is a lot of emphasis in some areas in terms of providing for international development with these programs. And so it's kind of a big family. MILC is made up of the 17-member board, which includes, for instance, the dean of the College of Agriculture, the Farm Business Management representative from the MINSCU system, the Department of Education, the Department of Agriculture, and so forth. So collectively, part of the purpose there is to take ideas, like you're suggesting, and bring them forth and work in a connected and unified effort to do that. I do know that, as I said, I think it would be better served to answer your question if we had the college dean of the College of Agriculture be able to answer about what they are doing. But it does work with ag ed departments in terms of international international programs in some cases.
I do have Representative Fitzsimmons next, unless it's directly to this. Okay, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And in my private sector job, we bring on a number of interns, and I know of two in particular that went on to the Peace Corps after the internship because they wanted to get some additional experience abroad as well. And so, yeah, I know of two specifically that have done that.
Thank you. Representative Fitzsimmons.
I was curious, you mentioned the U of M putting the cap on freshmen. Do you know how they, do they take into account situations like this where there is no other institution that has a program that handles it? I mean, putting a cap on something that's offered at many other schools is one thing, but where it's placed on where there is no other alternative in the state, that seems very problematic. I'm just, I know this, I'm looking for information. Maybe, you know, Bud and I could go back to the higher ed committee and ask them some questions on it. But, you know, situations where there is no other alternative, you know, or in where there's verifiable unmet needs on the career sector after that, on the career path, that have some leeway in that.
Thank you. Mr. Schoenfeld, did you have a comment?
Madam Chairman, if I could just suggest to Representative Simmons, would you please go back to the Higher Education Committee and ask those questions of the University of Minnesota, because we've been not getting at least satisfactory answers from us.
Representative Fitzsimmons.
Yes, I'll definitely make sure to ask that of the University of Minnesota. I think in situations where they're the only provider of a field, I think that's worthy of having an exemption over what they may have that's available elsewhere. So thank you for that piece of information.
Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Warren especially? Otherwise, thank you so much for your testimony. I think we've seen two excellent examples of ag education today. So thank you for coming. Dr. Henry, do you have another person or other comments?
Yes, Madam Chair. Another program that we're very excited about and we're very proud of is the MILSEA has been a catalyst behind the creation of the Academy for Sciences and Agriculture, which is an urban charter school, a charter school located here in the city that caters to students across the metro area, and is a great model of urban agriculture education. I have invited Ms. Becky Myers, which will talk about their program.
All right, if you would just state your name, please, and then likely spell the last name, too, please.
I'm Becky Meyer. Last name is M-E-Y-E-R. I'm the executive director of AFSA High School, the Academy for Sciences and Agriculture. AFSA started in 2001. I am not the founding director, but I have been with the school now for 11 years. You do have a brochure that we passed around. If you need another copy, we have some more copies here. And this is just a little overview of our program. Essentially, we exist because of MILSEA. Back in the formative years prior to the school opening in 2001, the initial startup grant money of about $300,000 was provided through this committee and MILSEA for the school to have a exploratory committee. They did some traveling to other urban areas and saw that Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, Miami, Houston, other areas have urban schools that have agricultural programs. But in the seven-county metro area, there's almost no agricultural education. They came back and looked at mechanisms on how to institute an urban ag academy type of program. And because of the fabulous charter school laws here in Minnesota, a charter school was chosen as the vehicle. The school opened in 2001 with 42 students that first year. We are now up to 300 students that represent over 25 different Minnesota school districts as a school of choice in grades 7 through 12. We have demographic of about 70% Caucasian, 30% students of color. We have 42% free and reduced meal students, and we have about 35% students of special needs. So it is a unique and interesting demographic that we have at our academy. And we're only about 15 minutes away, so if any of you would like to see it in person, you're all please welcome to call or stop in at your convenience. But essentially, we have been graduating students since 2004. About one-third of our graduates go on to major in an ag-related field, whereas in a typical high school, less than 5% go on into agricultural education. And in addition to the fact that we have a higher percentage of students going on into higher ed, all of our students are required to take agriculture classes every year. So we are, if nothing else, graduating students who are agriculturally literate, so that if they become music teachers or legislators or graphic designers, they all have some kind of a knowledge so that when salmonella pops up or some other kind of something comes into the news, they have some kind of educational background of agriculture that which they can kind of rely on to help make some good decisions. There's a number of things about our school that are unique within that program, but FFA is primarily our student vehicle. Our FFA officers are our student council. We utilize that program to the maximum. It gives us a local, regional, state, national, and international infrastructure that as a charter school we would not be able to get anywhere else. Our students have, in the last 11 years that I've been at the school, qualified for the National FFA Science Fair more than one every year. We have about 300 students in our FFA chapter. Next week during FFA week, they'll be doing a number of leadership activities with our students. We have also participated in the World Food Prize for several years, which is kind of termed as the Nobel Prize in agriculture. We have had two students who, through that program, have been accepted as interns and done research in China on rice fields. We have a first robotics team. We do consider ourselves a STEM school, as agriculture is science. That's how we define agriculture to the urban community. And our sciences are in the areas of food science, plant science, animal science, environmental science, and engineering. We do have a first robotics team, which last year took 17th in the state in our fourth year of competition. We have a CNC plasma cutter that they use in our engineering classes and computer programming that they work with. We have relationships with General Mills, Cargill, Land O'Lakes, CHS, and many other agricultural businesses in the Twin Cities area. We have mentors for our students that come in for our robotics program or our science fair projects. Our students have met with the CEOs and board of directors of most of these companies and participate in their annual meetings. We have a giving garden in cooperation with Land O'Lakes, which is kind of right down the road from us during the summertime. through some of our funds through MEALC. We've also received a couple of the smaller program grants. We have developed a hydroponic system in our greenhouse, and we grow about 75% of the lettuce that we serve in our school lunchroom. And we have a tomato, cucumbers, and beans that are also kind of in experimental stages for that purpose. A large number of our students choose to go to University of Minnesota and Century as our two primary Minnesota schools, but there are some issues with CAPS, and a lot of our students do choose to go to the University of Wisconsin River Falls because they also have an ag ed program, and they do take Minnesota seniors who graduate and want to go into agriculture education. So that would be a good place to look at kind of removing some of those caps so we can keep some of our students here in Minnesota. We have been a recipient of the Minnesota Academic Excellence Foundation Award for improvement in our test scores and the School Finance Award from MDE. We've done some hydroponics, with grant money from MEALC. We've also gotten some surveying equipment and some science equipment in our classrooms. One of the things we really try to do is kind of go out into the community. So we do have a couple of farm and community service days where all 300 of our students are assigned in groups of 6 to 10 to go work on ag production, hopefully places. We've gone to llama farms, goat farms, dairy farms, apple orchards. But our process there is that most of our students, almost all of our students, do not have any kind of agricultural background. And we like to get them out into the community so that they become aware of what real work is in my term, and help out somebody who might need a little spring cleanup or fall cleanup as they're getting ready for the next season. We also offer a number of college in the schools classes. We have 8 college in the schools classes through the University of Minnesota. 2 of those are in agriculture. We have the animal science course and the plant propagation course. And I have 3 agriculture teachers, and some of their credits do qualify for science credits. We do teach our economics through our agriculture department, and in general, you know, FFA and agriculture are the theme of our school. So we do put agriculture into theater when possible. Students have done the play Amber Waves and things like that. In literature, looking at books like the Aldo Leopold Sand County Almanac is one of the books, since nonfiction literature is kind of the wave for the Common Core standards now too. So we do try to integrate agriculture across the curriculum. And again, as I said, all students are required to take agriculture 7 through 12. And so they do get a strong background in those different science areas. And just want to say, I hope you do continue to support MEALC, because without groups like this, AFSA wouldn't exist. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Meyer. Representative Faust.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think it was 6 years ago that I, as part of the Ag Committee, had a chance to tour your school. I don't know. I think Representative Hamilton was there, and I don't remember who else was there. I don't know if Representative Poppy was there or not. No, Colby Sullivan was there. That's important, yeah. So, but I was very impressed, and it was a great tour, and you're doing great things there. And the thing that I guess struck me the most, or that I appreciated the most, was that this was an opportunity for Metro students to get exposed to agriculture and to, you know, really the beginnings of a career in agriculture. And at the time that we were there, there was such a shortage across the board in all areas of agriculture, and yet this opened the door to, you know, I don't remember what it was, 60, 70, 80 students per year graduating that now can go into that field that otherwise would have never had that exposure. And so you're doing fantastic things there, and I encourage everybody that has not gone there for a tour to try to do that sometime, because it was very impressive. So thank you for coming.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Foss. I just wanted to mention that is, we in the history of AFSA High School, we have had one student who has been a traditional production agriculture or farm kid. All of the rest of our kids really don't have a background. So it is all about learning new types of careers that are possible for students.
Thank you. Any other questions for Ms. Meyer? All right. Thank you very, very much. Appreciate what you're doing and how you're supporting agriculture and supporting our students. So thank you.
Thank you very much for this opportunity.
And Dr. Henry, did you have anyone else? Otherwise, we...
Madam Chair, at this time, we have completed all our invitees. And at this time, our presentation, we have completed our presentation.
Thank you. Because we have a bill that's before us, and Representative Erickson would like to be able to move that bill so that we can hopefully extend this sunset. Thank you very much, Dr. Henry, Mr. Schoenfeld, and for all of the testifiers. That was excellent information. Very much appreciate it.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Madam Chair.
Yes, and Representative Erickson.
I would like to move House File 322, pass it out of this committee, and go to the Government Committee?
Government Operations,
Government,
yes.
Operations Committee.
All right.
So moved.
So moved. And is there any discussion? Otherwise, Representative Hamilton.
Yeah, I just want to say thank you, Representative Erickson, for carrying this bill. It's a wonderful bill, and thank you.
So all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails. Thank you. And yep, we will, I'm going to have Representative Faust, hopefully we have some minutes that we can approve.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And I diligently read through the minutes of the last meeting, and so I move approval of the February 13th, 2013 minutes.
All right. And is there any additions or corrections? Otherwise, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Thank you. We will approve the minutes. And now we are going to hear from the soybean growers. They have been fully educated, if they were sitting here for the last over an hour, to hear more about the exciting things happening with MAIL-C and ag education. So welcome to the committee. We appreciate your participation today. So when you're ready. Representative Anderson.
When we're waiting, just a thought, Madam Chair. Would it be appropriate for this committee to encourage the university to come one day and explain their CAP system and when there's the need out there for more ag educators, how or why they couldn't have more students? I think that would be an appropriate committee topic.
I think we could do that. Thank you. Seems appropriate. Okay, so when you're ready, and you are, you can just present yourself, your name, and the information. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. My name is George Goblish, G-O-B-L-I-S-H. I'm here on the behalf of Minnesota Soybean Growers. I'd like to share with you a little of what we do in our organization, and hopefully maybe something what you can do for us, too, sometime.
That's awesome.
First off, we are a farmer organization, membership-based. So we have to, every year we have to buy our membership or a three-year membership or however. But it's all volunteer farmers on this board. Minnesota crop and livestock production has an economic impact of about $75 billion in the state of Minnesota, creating over 150,000 jobs annually. There is 3,700 farmers and or ag leaders as our members and growing every year. We founded our organization in 1962 and been working very hard since then on behalf of Minnesota Ag. We have 46 volunteer directors on our board coming from 42 Minnesota counties, reaching from all the way from Iowa to the Canadian border. And yes, we do grow beans in the north. Monitoring government policy and support research and market developments are some of our activities. That's why we're here today. We come up Capitol at least once a year. You'll probably see us more. We do outreach to customers. If you've seen some billboards around the cities, we also do Farmers Feed Us, and oh, the real story, that's what it is. And we support our 4-H and FFA whenever they call upon us. We do whatever we can to support those organizations because we know they are important. Which, thank you for that, Bill. That'll really help. Mm-hmm. We also work closely with our sister organization, the Minnesota Soybean Research Council. They're in charge of the checkoff dollars, which they invest in international marketing and domestic marketing and research and development for soybeans. And unfortunately, checkoff funds cannot be used for legislative purposes. So that's where our membership comes in. Everything we get off membership goes for policy. One of our major kudos is biodiesel. It truly was a win-win for the state, creating over 5,000 jobs. We currently produce 60 million gallons of biodiesel a year at three plants, with an economic output of $928 million. And with the inclusion of B5, that's like taking off the roads of Minnesota over 34,000 vehicles. Biotechnology is also very important to me and also my neighbor farmers, because without it we couldn't produce more, and that's what this world needs, is to produce more soybeans. Protein is in a short supply, and that's our job. We produce protein for the world. And it also protects the soil and water resources, increases production worldwide demand. Minnesota currently contributes $2.2 billion. $2.2 billion, or 43% of total agricultural exports in Minnesota. Some of the problems we do face today is some of our customers don't really know where we're at. They don't know where their food comes from. So we've been doing outreach, learning centers around the state. We go to the Minnesota Zoo State Fair, and that's also with those billboards of the real story. You can go online and check out the real story, see where your real food comes from real people. Livestock is our number one customer in the state. Without them, you know, we wouldn't have a market for soybeans. So please, anything you can do for the livestock industry would be greatly appreciated. Don't beat them up too much. Roughly half our beans are exported, and as you can see, China is our number one export market. But what you would maybe not expect, Mexico is number second. And by this chart, you can see we truly are a world supplier. Minnesota soybeans truly go all over the world. Which also relates to our infrastructure. Without our infrastructure, it is deteriorating. And anything you could see fit to do to help repair the current infrastructure before it gets down where we're going to have to replace it would be, I think, very cost effective. That's roads, bridges. I know a bridge down by me was out for over a year, and we had to travel 10 miles out of the way just because of road restrictions, because that bridge was out. So it is fixed now, but it took over a year because the funding was short. Water quality. Farmers are very environmentalists. We take care of our land. My father took care of his, my father before him, and so on. So I could have it. I'm going to pass it down to my son, and I'm sure someday he'll pass it down to his son or daughter. You know, that's what we do. That's who we are. We take care of the ground. In Minnesota, farmers have voluntarily restored more than 550,000 acres of wetlands since 1987. And the use of tile and control runoff. Tile is what we use to produce a very healthy, good crop. It's on farmland. It's not like we're tiling wetlands. It's on high production ground. All we're doing is making it better so we can feed the world. And because I truly believe in myself that not only do I feed the rich in the world, I feed the middle class, and I feed the poor worldwide, not just in the state of Minnesota. Thank you, and I'll take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Gablish. Yes, Representative Erickson.
Yes, thank you. I'm from Roseau originally in Lake of the Woods County, way up north. And 30 years ago, if you'd have told me that we would be a soybean-growing area, I would not have believed it, because could you tell me if it's a combination of the shortening of the growing season, seed varieties, or, you know, quicker thens, or the extended growing season that we're experiencing now, or a combination of the two? Or
I also sell seed. So, yes, it is a combination of the genetics and getting in early. We're seeing our best yield punch if we can plant beans early now. It never used to be that way. Most people would wait till June 1st to plant beans. But now if you finish when you're done planting corn, go in and start planting beans right away, we're seeing a better yield advantage.
All right. Any other questions? Thank you. I know that you have people out and about today visiting with legislators, so some of us have appointments yet to meet with people, and maybe some of you met with some soybean growers earlier. So thank you for doing that. Thank you for doing the presentation today. Yep. We appreciate that you fit it into your day to be able to do this.
Thank you.
Thank you. And so with that, we are able to adjourn for the day. Thank you.